Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You are listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For those people that might be unfamiliar with my voice, my name is Peter Mingles. We own this whole thing. We started this over towards the tail end of 2012, 2013, because I wanted a platform where we can talk about stuff that sometimes isn't allowed to be talked about or sometimes isn't very favorable. And when I first got started, I worked with a gentleman named Jim Turner, who I invited to be a guest host on our Building Fortunes radio shows, and he was gracious enough to give us Fridays at noon Eastern time. So this is the Citizens for Health radio show. If you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens or Citizens for Health, you'll be able to hear the previous radio shows. I'm going to be kind of brief on my introduction only because Jim has a special guest on the radio show today, but I never want to forget to tell you that you want to go to citizens.org. Citizens.org is his website. Sign up for the newsletter. Take advantage of the action alerts. We are here to have a really great radio show with Citizens. And for our guest speaker, I think your microphone is a little bit close to your mouth, so I hear you breathing, which is a good sign.
I'll guess fold breathing. It a further way. Yeah.
Guest breathing is always a good sign. No. But
just as long as not heavy breathing, right?
That's right. It's, but, you know, that's for other radio shows. But Jim Turner is here, and he's a lawyer over in Washington, D.C., again, for Citizens for Health. And I'll let Jim do the introduction because I am really excited to be here on this radio show listening in. So, Jim, over to you.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be here again. Today, I talked to my friend and colleague for many years, Sally Fallon. We discussed her new book, which is The Contagion Myth, which I'm going to let her explain. And we'll have questions about that, Peter. And feel free to just jump in and ask whatever comes in your mind. But Sally is the founder of the Weston A. Price Foundation, which I think many of your listeners will know about. It's a group that Citizens for Health has worked with from its inception. They work very hard on creating ideas about a better, more healthful diet, which is somewhat different than what we ordinarily hear from establishment nutrition experts. Sally might touch a tiny bit on that today, but we're actually going to discuss more about her new book with a member of the Weston A. Price Foundation board, Dr. Cowan, and she'll describe that and as we ask questions and discuss it. But Sally, welcome, welcome to be here. Glad to have you. And maybe before we get into the book, just give a quick thumbnail sketch about Weston A. Price Foundation and its kind of basic premises.
Okay, thank you, Jim, so much. Yes, the Weston A. Price Foundation, we've been around for 20 years now. We're a member-supported organization that publishes a journal, and we promote what we call the Wise Traditions Diet, which is based on the food principles of isolated, non-industrial people. Very different from what the dietitians tell us to eat today. These diets of old were very rich in animal fats, rich in cholesterol, they ate organ meats, they ate fats, they had fermented foods, and we try to help modern people put that diet to work for them in the modern world.
And I need to say, Sally, having visited your farm in Western Shore.
Southern Maryland, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Southern Maryland. Had some great meals there and also in your in-town place. However nutritious the diet is, it's wonderful to eat. So
food has to taste good, yeah.
read a bunch of written over the years, and I've been very happy to help wherever we could to work on legal problems and so forth. And it's something that everyone should look into, the Weston A. Price Foundation, and learn some more very important things about creating a happy health diet. And it's the base from which Sally is working and talking today. Now, Sally, interested in, you're giving us a thumbnail book, and I published about, a week ago or so?
Well, we've had a very exciting week, actually. The book officially came out, I think it was last Thursday, and but there were pre-orders on Amazon and all the booksellers, and just before it came out, Amazon canceled it and took it off their website. They told us that they took it off the website because it did not support the mainstream narrative about coronavirus, and they told the people who'd ordered books that the publisher had withdrawn the book, so that was a lie. But we sent notices out that the book had been banned on Amazon, and that tells you this is a book that the establishment does not want people to read. It shot to number one on Barnes & Noble, and there are a number of booksellers who have it. Barnes & Noble, Indigo, Books A Million, and Target all carry the book. And for those people overseas, they can get the Nook Book version from Amazon, from Barnes & Noble, and have that right away. So it's been very exciting for us. And so what is it in this book that's making people upset? Well, this book is, first of all, questioning whether, in fact, there is a coronavirus. And don't believe me when I say there's no coronavirus. I'm holding in my hand a CDC document from July, which says we have no quantified virus isolates available. So there are no, they have not isolated, properly isolated and purified this virus to see what it is, to see what its genetic components are. And so that brings up the question, then, what's all this testing about? The testing is getting little DNA snippets, but we have absolutely no idea whether they correspond to a virus, if such a virus exists. So the testing is completely bogus. It's useless, and all of the numbers that we have about coronavirus and how many people have had it or don't have it or whatever are completely meaningless. And then the second, yes?
Okay, go ahead, keep going. I just wanted you at some point to describe your co-author as well.
I will.
Just be sure to put that in the answer as well.
Yes, okay. But the second part of this, first of all, there is no virus. And secondly, they have not done contagion studies on this illness. Now, back in 1918, when 50 million people died of the Spanish flu, they did contagion studies. They spent a lot of money on contagion studies to see if one sick person could transfer this disease to a well person. And they did it with about 100 sick people and 100 healthy volunteers. And they could not create the illness in a single person by exposing them to the sick person or putting sick person's fluids into their noses or even into their bloodstream. They did not prove contagion. And that's what needs to be done today. The Chinese did this with animal studies, and they found that the animals did not get sick by exposure to sick animals. So there's no virus, and this is not contagious. And that is explosive information. The question now is, what's all the fuss about and what's making people sick? Because people are getting sick. We're not saying that this is just a mild version of the flu. My co-author, Dr. Tom Cowan, he is a co-founder of the Weston A. Price Foundation. He and I have written a couple other books together, and he has written many books on his own, and he is what I would consider, he is the greatest medical thinker that we have today. He never accepts anything on face value. He looks at the studies. He looks at the logic of what people are saying.
Okay, now, Sally, if we do, in fact, have something that's serious and a problem and people are getting sick, what is it?
Okay. our theory, and we're happy to have people disprove the theory, but our theory is that it's electromagnetic radiation, particularly from the recent rollout of 5G, which is millimeter waves. These have been studied since the 1970s and shown to be dangerous for people. This illness, as you well know, started in Wuhan, China. At the time when Wuhan, China rolled out the 5G technology, they had, I think it was 10,000 base stations, more than were existed in the whole United States at the time. Then it went to Europe, particularly northern Italy and Spain, where they were rolling out 5G. In areas that were extremely polluted, had a lot of air pollution, and we know that the combination of air pollution and these millimeter waves makes it worse. Then it came to New York, and then it has spread to the south as they rolled out and deployed the 5G. So this is what we think it is. The symptoms are the symptoms of radiation poisoning. They are loss of taste, electrical fizzy feeling, a widespread clotting. And on autopsy of these coronavirus patients, so-called coronavirus patients, they find a complete degeneration of the lungs. So this is a very odd disease. It's hard to explain how a virus or even a bacteria could cause such symptoms, but they are they correspond very well to the symptoms of radiation poisoning.
Now, where are the how do we know what the symptoms of radiation poisoning are? Where are there studies? What do you base that particular observation on?
There are many, many studies. We cite certain documents. One was a document put together by the U.S. Navy, and this was in the 1970s, showing what the symptoms were, and they were very similar, a loss of taste and smell, fatigue, flu-like symptoms, dry cough, difficulty breathing, hypoxia, and then people who have metal in their bodies are very susceptible to this because the metal, of course, is conducting electricity. One of the symptoms in one of the studies they did was arcing between the teeth, so arcing of the metal fillings, the mercury-based fillings in the teeth. So this is an electrical phenomenon, and our bodies, human bodies, are not designed to deal with such strong and tiny frequencies. They're not tiny frequencies, they're very, very high frequencies, millimeter waves.
How does this explain, say, for example, the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic?
Yeah. So the Spanish flu, which was worldwide, exactly corresponded in time to the rollout of radar all over the, radio all over the world, especially on military bases. All these radio towers were put up. And this was completely new to the human being. And the flu corresponded exactly with the rollout of the radio. Now, there were exacerbating factors, such as using aspirin, giving people a lot of aspirin, and also all the vaccinations that the soldiers got. So the military was seemed to get this a lot more than other people. It's very similar today, where they put people in respirators and gave them antivirals, and it made them worse. So the treatments that they're giving to people are actually causing a lot of deaths in people that might otherwise have recovered. What's interesting, Jim, is that people have recovered. We don't get sick when we're exposed to radio waves anymore. And we explain that also in the book. What people are calling viruses are actually helpful exosomes. They are exactly the same size and use the same receptors of what they're calling viruses. And rather than being enemies, these are our friends. They help these cells get rid of toxins, and they also act as messengers throughout the body, and they help us adjust to new environments, new situations, new levels of radiation, new toxins in the environment. You know, we saw in the last 20 years, we've seen a complete paradigm shift about bacteria. Bacteria, up until recently, were considered the enemy. There's no such thing as a good bacteria. The only good bacteria is a dead bacteria. And we basically tried to sterilize people with heavy use of antibiotics. Now we know that bacteria are our friends, that we couldn't live without bacteria. We live in symbiotic relationship with bacteria. And we need to have the same paradigm shift for viruses. We just have assumed that these tiny, tiny particles that we can only see in the electron microscope, we've just assumed that they're enemies. Whereas we need to start talking about the virome, just like we talk about the biome. The virome is a whole system in our bodies that protects us.
What's the? How do you know the difference between a an exosome and a virus when you see one?
Well, you don't. They look the same. And actually, we do quote a very leading virologist who has said viruses and exosomes, they're the same thing. They're the same thing. So it's just what are you going to call them? Are you going to assume they're harmful and call them a virus? Virus means poison in Latin. Or are you going to assume that they're helpful and beneficial and call them exosomes?
So when you say they're the same thing, so they bind to the cell in the same – they're the same thing, so they both bind to the cell. Is that correct?
Well, they actually bind to the same receptors. You can actually see pictures of them encapsulating a tiny particle of a toxin, and then they go out of the cell. It's not like the viruses are coming into the cell and attacking the cell. They are going out of the cell, into the bloodstream. They help the body get rid of these particles or toxins, but they also attach to other cells and bring a message. Hey, there's something going on here. You need to be prepared for this. So they're basically messengers in the body.
You said that people were dying of collapsed lungs or lung disease or some kind of lung breakdown under the Corona 19 situation, whatever it's called. How does that work? What does that mean? Very specifically, my understanding is that originally at the outset they were using respirators to help people and then learned quite out of experience that that was actually a counterproductive thing to do. Am I right in my understanding of that? That's just from basically reading, you know, popular news reports.
Yeah, that's a very good question, and I don't quite have the answer to that. Were the respirators causing the lung degeneration, or was it this radiation poisoning causing the lung degeneration? There's a we need to do. We don't know all these answers.
One of the things I noted in what I read is that they were getting low oxygen reports, and that a standard practice in that kind of situation had been to put respirators on people to help them get better oxygen. But in fact, people were having low oxygen even though their lungs were working fine. So that there had to be some other source of the problem.
Right. And so basically, as you can imagine, we have the iron in our blood cells, red blood cells, and it's the iron that carries the oxygen to all the tissues. So somehow, because of this electromagnetic radiation, it is disrupting the iron, and that makes sense because iron is a very conductive metal. And what happens is the iron is pulled out of the cells and the red blood cells. So the red blood cells are going around the body, but they don't have any oxygen in them. So the people get hypoxia, lack of oxygen. And once these iron molecules come out of the cells, they are very dangerous. An iron molecule inside a red blood cell is, you know, protected, so to speak. But once it gets out, then it becomes a marauder. It's extremely reactive and then causes a lot of damage in the body. And particularly, it would cause a lot of damage in the lungs.
So that's the mechanism you're suggesting to be looked into.
Yes. Yes.
Now we had radio in 1918, and we've got 5G right now, but we have had a lot of epidemics in between there, or at least it seems that we have. How do you explain that?
That's a really good question. We talk about this wonderful book, The Invisible Rainbow, by Arthur Furstenberg. And he correlates all of these flu epidemics that we've had since 1918 with the rollout of some kind of new electromagnetic technology, radar, putting satellites in the air, the rollout of cell phones. There was an increase in deaths at the time of the rollout of cell phones. So he makes a very good epidemiological correlation, and now we always say epidemiology is not proof, but it gives us an idea of where to look. And we need to do a lot more work on this. We can do it with animals. But what we've done is just jump to the conclusion that this is caused by a virus, shut down the economy, made people wear masks, put millions of people into poverty for something that doesn't exist.
And, well, what about epidemics that occurred, say, in the early 1840s, 1850s?
Yeah. So I have a whole chapter on former epidemics that were considered contagious, and we start with the plague, the Black Death of the 1400s. And this was an incredible thing that happened. It started in southern Europe, and it moved upwards across northern Europe and ended up in Iceland, blamed on rats, but it moved so quickly. A typical infectious disease doesn't move that quickly. It spreads gradually. This was like one day it was in this city, and the next day it was in the city north of there, and so on. And there were no rats in Iceland, and yet they had the plague in Iceland. We talk about a comet. A comet was observed across the sky, and the ancients and our ancestors thought that comets were not a good thing. And we now know that comets are extremely radioactive. They actually spew out X-rays. They draw radiation from the sun, and they create an extremely electrically charged environment, and including ionizing radiation such as X-rays. So that is the most likely explanation for the plague. There were smaller plagues after that, possibly debris from this comet. We don't know for sure. An interesting disease is smallpox, which in the Western world has completely gone away, even though we no longer vaccinate for it. And I talk about the work of Dr. Campbell in Texas, who believed that smallpox was caused by bedbugs. And he had a clinic there, and he was able to completely eliminate smallpox by getting rid of bedbugs. And, of course, we don't have bedbugs today, and so we don't have smallpox today.
How does the bedbug issue with smallpox relate to the electromagnetic field issue of creating infectious diseases?
Well, this is a different cause. This is not an electromagnetic cause. This is an insect bite. And almost all insect bites contain poisons. And it's interesting, Dr. Campbell noted that people who got plenty of vitamin C did not get smallpox even if they were bitten. So his two-pronged attack was to clean things up, clean up the beds, keep out the bugs, and make sure that people got fruits and vegetables, and that's how he stopped the smallpox in San Antonio, Texas. Well, today we all get fruits and vegetables. We all have a certain amount of vitamin C in our diets, and we don't have bedbugs anymore. So this disease has gone away, and it's not because of anything the medical profession did.
Now, let's go back to something you said earlier in the same context, and that is that it appears, at least the way you suggested it, that there's some relationship between the quality of the air pollution, and what's going on with Corona 19.
Yes. Yeah, we talk about the work of Stephanie Senoff, who's really been interested in the negative effects of glyphosate. That's the main ingredient of Roundup. And apparently, a lot of cities, a lot of countries use a lot of biodiesel, which is the diesel made out of corn or soybeans or whatever, and that will contain glyphosate. And she talks about some cases where people got the symptoms of this disease just being exposed to the diesel fumes of the biodiesel, particularly the biodiesel.
And let me ask you this question. Do you believe that, or what would be your thoughts about in a situation where you've got biodiesel being used does it make any sense to wear a mask in that kind of a setting as opposed to somewhere where it's not?
That is a good question. I don't know whether the biodiesel can get through the pores in the masks. We do know that the pores in these masks are 10 times larger than any virus. So even if this were caused by a virus, the masks are useless. And the studies show that the masks are useless. And we talk about all of these in the book.
Okay. Now, by the way, I remember back in the old days, back in the 1940s and 50s and earlier, if you wanted to have a really good selling book, you said banned in Boston. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
So I guess we could start a slogan now, banned on Amazon, and really make a bestseller out of pretty much any book that they take off.
Well, it's very sad what's happened in this country. I mean, even our interviews get taken off of YouTube and so forth. I mean, you can still find them, but it's very sad that we have this censorship again. This is because the pharmaceutical industry is so powerful. But for us, it's actually been, a blessing in disguise because it's brought a lot of attention to the book, and we shot up to number one on Barnes & Noble. So they've probably done us a favor. But I think it's very important for people to see what's happening and the fact that there really is censorship in this country.
Well, remember, I mean, we want to be sure to make the distinction between the government censoring something and an enterprise like Amazon saying you can't sell products through our store. The way I look at it, it's really absolutely foolish and stupid for Amazon, for its own purposes, to be blocking the sale of a book like this.
Yeah,
now,
it is.
Now, the government to do it, we could go to court, bring a lawsuit, and say you're not allowed to do that.
Right.
And then we'd get sorted out. Amazon is like a shopping center, and it's been long held in the courts that the shopping center can ban anybody from any sign they want from the shopping center. It's private property.
Right.
And so that's where but I like the slogan, banned on Amazon, and we should plaster that all over every one of these books.
Yeah,
and,
I think we need to put a little banner across, right.
Maybe we could get Barnes & Noble to compete on that level. You know, Barnes & Noble will make a special out of any book banned on Amazon. That would be an interesting sales program.
Yeah, I think for now we're just not rock the boat because we'd like to keep it on Barnes & Noble.
Peter, you're being awfully quiet there. Do you have any thoughts or questions about all of this?
No, I'm fascinated with the subject. I've heard a few of these things before, and somewhat perplexed. I shake my head left and right because number one, Sally's a really smart person. She's done a lot of research, and the idea that today I can't call someone if I were a scientist and say, "Could you send me a sample of that coronavirus thing?" Because I want to be able to see if whatever I'm using is going to be able to blah, 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 kill it, test against it, blah, blah, blah. So there's not, like, I can't order coronavirus if I was a scientist. That's the part that's, like, super messed up. And then I'm like, well, wait, excuse me? Like, what do you mean? Did you run out?
There's no backlog.
There's no, and then you just say, this is really messed up. Like, this is really messed up.
Yeah. The virologists themselves will tell you, it's too hard to purify this virus, and we don't need to. We just use a PCR test. I just want to read you a statement that's on Tom Cowan's website. He said, "I've been challenged by a number of scientists and doctors about this. I have offered to pull the book if anyone can show me a properly done study in which the virus was isolated, purified, and characterized according to the consensus agreement of the 1973 Pasteur Institute guidelines." So we do have guidelines for doing this. "And then are able to show that the purified virus is able to cause disease. So far, no such studies have been forthcoming." So you have to ask yourself, what are they looking at in these tests and giving you a positive test if they don't even know what's in the virus?
Also, this characterization of viruses, I think, is broader than merely coronavirus. There are a number of viruses that we assume are viruses because they've been characterized, which when you actually go look at the science, you'll find that the characterization is actually about as direct as it is with the coronavirus. It's a very complicated area, and I think your point, Sally, that you make about the virome, is that what you call it, the virome?
The virome, yes.
Mm-hmm. The virome. The point you make about the virome is a very important concept for people to get in their mind.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.